Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and Jon Favreau, as well as the rest of the team at Lucasfilm, have dreamed up over the past 45 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host Brian Gaughan and I are recording this week's show on Sunday, May 21st, 2023. And Brian, given the news of the week, I can't help but quote the opening of Charles Dickens' The Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Oh, man. Can I breathe now? Can I let my breath out? I've been like holding my breath through this whole thing and turning purple because it's like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is very much an evolving story. So let's start with the good news. All right, we have a brand new Indiana Jones film, which just had its world premiere at Cannes. Okay, so yes, it got kind of middling reviews.
But it got a five-minute standing ovation.
Yeah, but I want to say the new Martin Scorsese film got a 7-minute standing ovation. Okay. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, and a standing ovation, and that was the other thing that I don't know if you saw the news coverage after this. There were people who were talking about, well, yes, you know, Indiana Jones got a 5-minute long polite standing ovation. And it was like, all right, what's that mean?
Oh, man. People like to kick.
I forget which film critic pointed out. It's like, look, you go over to Cannes. First of all, you're jet lag. Second of all, you got to wear a tuxedo. And you're out of joint. You're right. Not up on your sleep. And he said, and it's really dangerous to go off of what people say in Cannes versus what happens when a movie actually gets out in theaters. Case in point, somebody was pointing out what happened with Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which got a horrible reception at Cannes and then went on to do really great business. What are the point? Do we really want a bunch of sleep-deprived people in tuxedos telling us whether or not a popcorn movie works?
Yeah, that's true.
This is a serious movie-going crowd. And if they tell me that a drama like The Zone of Interest, have you heard about this Jonathan Glazer movie, the one about Rudolf Hess, the camp commandant of Auschwitz?
Yeah, I heard a little bit about it, that they showed it at Cannes.
They did.
And then people were
talking about it. And again, what people have found especially chilling about this movie is it deals with the household. His home was right next to the concentration camp. There was a fence separating the yard where the kids played from where the guards and the ovens and all that stuff was. And so
Jesus,
what's really freaking people out is just be in that house and have people going about their daily lives as if nothing is going on next door. And for me, it's kind of an interesting dichotomy. The Zone of Interest is about real Nazis, where their actions, their complete lack of humanity chills you to the bone. Where Dial of Destiny has movie Nazis, the ones where, you know, you're sitting there with your popcorn and you're perfectly at ease when one gets punched in the face or more to the point, their face melts, like in the original Raiders. You could laugh as they got what they deserved.
Even the very funny scene in the Holy Grail one where Hitler grabs the book and signs it.
There you go. The book burning scene. But all right. Isn't this supposedly why the Russians were the big bads in 2008 in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? Because the story I've always heard is that Spielberg, after he directed Schindler's List, which, again, released in 93, Steven supposedly said he no longer wanted to make movies with movie Nazis, where they were the villains. Do you think that might be one of the reasons that Spielberg ultimately opted out of directing Dial of Destiny back in February of 2020, that script came in and it's like, movie Nazis again?
Yeah, but didn't he at one time say about Crystal Skull that maybe he should have kept with the Nazis? Didn't he say something like that?
I don't recall.
At one time? Ever. Okay. Then I must have misread it. But I don't think that's the mm-hmm. reason as much as, he's 75 mm-hmm. years old. And those films take a lot of, time and a lot of energy mm-hmm. to make. And you're always, we've heard the famous scene with Harrison Ford getting dysentery. Mm-hmm. Well, Steven Spielberg never got sick. Mm-hmm. And the reason he never got sick mm-hmm. is he would have crates mm-hmm. of chili, canned chili, mm-hmm. sent to the set or his hotel room, and that's all he ate. So he would never get sick. So, and you look at him too, and he's like we are. He's the sun probably isn't friendly to him, mm-hmm. and he's very slight, and I just feel that he didn't want to. It would exhaust him to do. I mean, and look, his last action film was Ready Player mm-hmm. One, but that was probably all blue screen. Mm-hmm. So you sit behind a monitor. This he actually had to go out and film. So I think it's more of a where I am now type of thing. And he had a lot to do with it also. I mean, he probably had his fingers in.
He was the executive producer of this thing. And anybody who's been paying attention to the early reviews or the press leading up to this, how much of the prologue, so to speak, of this film features the indie right. from 35 years ago. In fact, what's kind of interesting is to hear the stories. What they did is they gathered together all the footage they could get of Harrison Ford from 1981, but also magazine photos, press photos, that sort of thing, and fed that into the algorithms that were used to de-age the footage that was actually shot with the modern-day Harrison. In a weird sort of way, Spielberg did have a fairly heavy influence on at least the way Harrison looked in this film. Just to circle back to the Nazi thing for a moment, though, given that there was the famous story about how Frank Darabont had written the first script for Indiana Jones 4. I mean, don't get me wrong. There were multiple scripts written for Indiana Jones 4.
Yeah, even Jeremy Bozeman wrote one.
Yeah, wasn't that the Indiana Jones and the Monkey God, and there was Indiana Jones and the Saucer Men? I think that was Jeb Stuart. But Frank Darabont wrote Indiana Jones and the City of the Gods. And what's interesting about Darabont's script is there's a character in that film called Von Groten. He's a former Nazi who switched sides to the Soviets after World War II. And there's this scene at the end of the movie. In fact, it's kind of the first pass of what happens to Kate Blanchett's character in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, where she wants all of the knowledge in the world and in the universe, and the aliens grant her wish, and then her head catches on fire, which that happens. Have a little mystery in life, folks. That's all. That's the message there. But anyway, similar thing was supposed to happen in City of the Gods. Von Groten is seen at the end as the aliens are granting wishes to those who have made it to the inner sanctum of the City of Gods, their deepest desire. And so Von Groten says, "I want the dream reborn. I want the glory we created." And according to Darabont's script, the vapor of Von Groten's wish takes final form, the face of the alien flowing like smoke and forming into the glorious smiling visage of Adolf Hitler himself. Oh, and then the disembodied alien voice says, "You shall have the glory you created." Now back to what Frank wrote in the script. Hitler's smile becomes the toothy grimace of a leering demonic skull. And Von Groten starts screaming as the Führer's ectoplasmic hand forms a vicious talon that then reaches in, sinks into Von Groten's disgusting black heart, and sucks the life force right out of him with the crush of collapsing bones. And so this is...
And this is why we have a PG-13.
Well, yes, but also clearly Frank is a fan and a student of the original Raiders of the Lost Ark, likewise right. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. But again, these aren't real Nazis. These are movie Nazis.
Yeah.
It's easy to see why a Spielberg, post Schindler's List, might have had a problem with an Indiana Jones script that had a scene like this in it. But here's the weird part. I have heard that it was George Lucas, not Steven Spielberg, who ultimately rejected Darabont's script for Indiana Jones and the City of Gods. And I can't find out why it is exactly that George sort of dug at his heels. But like I said, folks, if you want to check this out, you can go online, Google, again, Indiana Jones and the City of Gods, and the Darabont script will pop right up there. If you're a fan of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and I know there's only about five of you out there, but that's okay.
Six,
there we go.
Actually, my whole family, so we can get up to 10.
Okay. Seriously, folks, if you get a chance, take some time, chase down the script for the City of the Gods, because what's fascinating is if you know Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, a lot of the ideas that ultimately wound up in that film are in the Darabont script, but in kind of a mutated form. But anyway, we haven't even gotten to the real news yet. So, okay, yeah. Speaking of the news portion of Looking at Lucasfilm is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience every time, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. FYI, folks, a little housekeeping before we move on here. This week, over on the Disney Dish, Len and I talk about the Indiana Jones and the Summer of Hidden Mysteries promotion, which was this really short-lived thing that was done at Disneyland back in the summer of 2008. In fact, don't you love how we beat a dead horse on this show? Because we were just talking about Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, and this is what sort of prompted Disney to, we should, you know, try to do a cross promotion here. So there was the Indiana Jones and the Secret of the Stone Tiger show that was presented in the old Aladdin's Oasis restaurant. There was also this stunt show that would go on a couple of times a day where you'd be walking through Adventureland and it's like, is that Indiana Jones up on the roof of the Jungle Cruise beating up a guy? And it's like, yeah, sure enough, it is. And then if you got on the Jungle Cruise at various places along the river, they had temporarily added artifacts from the first four indie films. There was also a rolling boulder photo op in one corner of the park, and you could even pick up a map and walk through the area and decode messages. I mean, mind you, it wasn't... Remember when you used to go, what was it, the first summer that the Indiana Jones Adventure was open? You could you could go into the Temple of the Forbidden Eye with your AT&T card and decipher what was written on the wall. I always thought that was a kind of a cool detail.
It was great, and all that stuff is still there, and you can get it online. You can print it out and still like decipher everything. I mean, mainly it combined AT&T with Indiana Jones. You know, it's like, you know, be careful of what choice you make. You know, make the right choice, AT&T. So
especially when it comes to your phone plan. Please disregard the spikes that are coming out of the ceiling. But yes, you want to be really careful about that phone plan.
But remember, there wasn't cell phones back then.
This is true.
The brick. You had the brick.
carrying around that shoebox-sized phone.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, if you use the map to decode, you'd take your map home, and if you went on...
And this was at Disneyland?
This was at Disneyland for three months.
Oh, man, I know how I missed this.
Well, again, it was only for 3 months, and as it turned out, the Mothers of Orange County kind of did this thing in. Well, we explain the particulars on the show over at the Disney Dish, but...
Okay, I can't wait to hear it.
But what's especially kind of sad about this is Disney had really, really hoped that the Secret of the Stone Tiger show would become the next Jedi training academy.
Oh.
But again, that didn't happen.
Well, I can't wait to hear this, so...
Now, back to the good news! Okay, at the Upfronts this past week, Lucasfilm President Kathleen Kennedy revealed that the Indiana...
Should we explain what the upfronts are?
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Just a quick thing. It used to be Pasadena is where all the upfronts used to be.
That's
but then after COVID, it was online, and now they're doing it in New York, which I don't know why. Maybe there's something going on there, or it's because when it was in Hollywood's backyard, then you had a lot of press and... you know.
Oh, certainly. And you had a number of celebrities turn them. You know, I know.
New York is more the people who need to be there.
Well, okay. It's also more to the point, that's where a lot of the ad agencies, the ones, I mean, again.
Right.
And in fact, it's sort of explained the concept of the upfront. This is, you know, you announce the TV season back when TV seasons.
On networks. Start,
yeah. Yeah, on networks, you know, started in September. And I love, do you know why they started in September?
Yes, because that's when the brand new cars.
There we go. The
next year's cars, like 2024 cars, mm-hmm. came out mm-hmm. in September, October. And that's when the car companies would spend a lot of money to get their ads out there.
See.
And that's how.
This is why you do a show with a smart person, folks. Yes, no, that's it exactly.
Or a geek,
but
yeah.
That's right. From like the 50s was why right. the television season would start in September.
But it's all changed now.
It
drives me crazy watching the Emmys that they take place in September and the TV shows are from September to September.
They are.
Because we don't need that anymore. No, and most things are streaming and available all the time. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, that's when they show all these shows to the advertisers, and they ask for the money up front.
There we go. A great explanation. Thank you. Okay. Well, anyway, Kathleen is on stage revealing that the Indiana Jones movie catalog is coming to Disney Plus end of this month, folks, May 31st. And all four have previously been over on Disney Plus. And if we're being completely honest.
Yeah, I thought they were.
They're still there till May 31st. Also, to add to the pile, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, which was
I can't wait to see this again.
To explain, this is a TV series that ran on ABC from March of 1992 through July of 1993.
And this is where Frank Darabont got his start. He wrote, I think, several scripts. Mm-hmm. But when they showed it on ABC, mm-hmm. there was always a prologue and an epilogue mm-hmm. where they would have a 90-year-old Indiana Jones.
93, by the way. 93.
That's right, because it came out in 93. Mm-hmm. A 93-year-old Indiana Jones, mm-hmm. and he would do something, you know, he hangs out in all these museums, mm-hmm. and he attacks these little kids mm-hmm. and tells them, well, you know, when I was, mm-hmm. and then it would go to the story, and it would, one week it would be younger Indiana Jones, mm-hmm. like a 9-year-old, 10-year-old, mm-hmm. and the other one would be a teenager, mm-hmm. 16, and you grew up with him. Mm-hmm. And he was always doing what Quantum Leap called the kiss of destiny, mm-hmm. where he would meet these people that he met Theodore Roosevelt in Africa when he was a little mm-hmm. kid. Mm-hmm. He met Mata Hari in during World War I. Mm-hmm. He was at Versailles, mm-hmm. which is possibly one of the best written and most incredible stories, because it tells you what happened. Mm-hmm. It tells you why there was a World War II. Mm-hmm. And it tells you why there was a Vietnam War. And it all started at Versailles. Wow. And then he was at the Troubles mm-hmm. in Ireland. Mm-hmm. He was everywhere. And it was just great. I mean, the Jazz Age, mm-hmm. you know, they brought in all these other, they even had a murder mystery. Mm-hmm. It was one of the best shows ever that dealt with things like this. And it had the whole Indiana Jones feel to it. And even one of the episodes, mm-hmm. and I think it may have been just a movie, mm-hmm. a standalone movie, had Harrison Ford.
That's right.
In the prologue the epilogue.
Playing a saxophone, right?
Playing a saxophone, and then it goes into the Chicago Jazz Age.
Okay.
But the thing about when it came on DVD, mm-hmm. all those prologues and mm-hmm. epilogues were taken out, including the Harrison Ford, which people just died, because Lucas directed that too. Mm-hmm. And it was a series ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. It used effects mm-hmm. that were just getting off the ground. I think that's when he really used his ILM digital effects was on these movies or on these shows.
This was the early days of ILM working with digital set extensions and that sort of effects work. And if we jump ahead to 1997, you know, to the first quarter of 1997, that's when we get our special editions of the Star Wars movies and the whole notion of, you know, well, look what I learned with the young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And, you know, there's stuff in The New Hope and or A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi that's bugged me forever. And now I can go in and fix that. And more to the point, if we think about, you know, just jump ahead 2 years further from there, we get our first of the prequels, The Phantom Menace. And this is a lot of what George learned and used on that film and the two that followed came on the heels of the young Indiana Jones Chronicles. So no, you're not wrong. It's an important project, which, by the way, all of this stuff drops on May 31st, too, along with those four indie films. And Bob Iger, during the most recent earnings call, brought up the idea that Disney, after a period of, we only make content for our streaming service.
Right, here we go.
Well, that's the thing. You know, they suddenly talked about, well, maybe we will make content for other folks. And so you gotta wonder, to get these four films, what a Disney horse trade. You know, it's kind of like the whole how the Spider-Man Sony films are coming over to Disney Plus. It's like, okay, so what did you horse trade? What's Paramount Plus get for giving you indie?
Well, will he see, this is what I'm hopeful, especially after they canceled Willow, which I think is one of the biggest mistakes. You got to walk before you can run. And the first one was, a lot of people liked it. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, some people couldn't be bothered with it. But, mm-hmm. you know, it was the Game of Thrones without any nudity. So, mm-hmm. you know, what are you going to do? But it was pretty good. The characters were great. The story was great. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have seen the other chapters. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that he could sell it back? Who Columbia? Was mm-hmm. Columbia the one who originally released it? That he could send it, or that another streaming service could do something with it, or anything. I mean, you know, there was talk of a new Indiana Jones series, mm-hmm. and that disappeared.
It did. If I remember correctly, wasn't the original Willow released by MGM?
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, and MGM right now, but isn't, who does MGM now?
See, this is the age we live in right now. I want to say a lot of MGM's library titles, because Warner Brothers Discovery, in fact, there's a number of film historians who get crazy lately because Warner Brothers, when it clips together 100 years of her history, will periodically throw in a clip from The Wizard of Oz and Singing in the Rain. And it's like, you didn't make that. MGM made that. It's like, yeah, but we own the film library. Yeah. So it's our property. And if we say it's part of our history, it's part of our history. We own it.
Well, it looks like MGM is a studio once again. Mm-hmm. And they do release some. They release the Creed films.
Okay.
So they're still doing, you know, major movies. They did House of Gucci, mm-hmm. The Covenant. They just did The Covenant.
But like I said, it's like, where'd your film library wind up? You know, and
right, no, that's right. And they're the one studio that doesn't have a streaming company or streaming mm-hmm. service. So
I remember 4 and 5 years ago, there was such a big deal about how Comcast got the rights to the Harry Potter movies. And we're talking about how they're going to show them on TBS and TNT and, you know, all of their various cable channels. And that was because, well, Comcast, of course, is the parent of NBC Universal. And they love the fact that they have the Harry Potter stuff in their theme parks. But that was only for a set number of years. And now, of course, with the launch of Max, all of the discussion of how, oh, well, if you want to see Harry Potter, they're here. All 8 of the movies are here. And right. We are also discussing making a Harry Potter series. And when you live in an age like this where it's all about IP, and in fact, it's worth also noting that we got other Lucasfilm-related news coming out of the upfronts. We finally got a release date for the Star Wars Ahsoka limited series, which is supposed to be August 31st, 2023. But some folks are warning that that is a placeholder. Previously, we had heard that Ahsoka would show up in the late summer of this year, and that date may be slippy-slidey. But tell you what, you know what's not a placeholder? The closing date of Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser. That ship literally sails on September 28th. And why that date? Brian and I will get to that on the second half of today's show. Before we get started here, I want to apologize. We did mention at the tail end of the last episode that we were going to get caught up on the second season of Bad Batch, and we were going to get caught up on the third season of Mandalorian. And Brian, we're going to get to that next show, folks. But
that's fine. I get to watch it again, so I'm not
okay. Upset okay, about but it's there. You know, just do you want to give folks a taste of the road we were going down there, or
well, the Bad Batch is setting things up and cleaning things up for the rest of the universe.
Let me just throw a controversial thing out there. I don't think Tech's dead. I mean, I get it.
I don't either.
You know, he fell from a great height, and we were shown his goggles, but we've also seen a lot of people on med beds or whatever the hell the things are. But
yep.
And clearly Omega was torn up by what happened there. So
hey, I blame Dallas.
What, he's going to turn up in the shower?
No. But no, that's even worse. But it's who shot JR was the first cliffhanger that were between seasons. And then everybody thought, ooh, this is a good idea to do. And, you know, you give your blood, sweat, and tears through a whole season.
Yep.
And then you're not satisfied. And you have to hold your breath until you get to the next series. Those things upset me, but I tend to ignore them and just focus on the good.
I will also say that the rug pull at the end of the very last episode.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of felt like a moron because it's, well, of course, idiot. You know, had you been listening to the voice? Had you? No, yeah, of course. You should have put that together. But now pivoting to Mando season 3, anything you want to tease here before we do our deep dive in the show?
It was a roller coaster. There was some controversy in it. I think one of the funniest things was episode 3, when people saw it was 52 minutes, they were losing their mind going, oh, great, we have something that's not half an hour. It's going to be blowing up, and it's going to be fights, and everything's going to be great. And it was a Andor story, basically. And I thought that was funny, the bait and switch. But I think it was important because this and maybe that's not important, but you saw the puppet masters. You saw Favreau, you saw Filoni, you saw Kennedy, and you saw that they were telling the audience they were in charge. I mean, when you get that, what was it, episode 6 with Lizzo and Jack Black, when you get that, you knew that they were having fun. And you were along for the ride, and you were no longer steering if you ever thought you were steering.
That's an interesting take. And more to the point, we know we've got more of that coming. We know Mandalorian season 4 is coming. Likewise, season 3 of Bad Batch. But as of Thursday, we got some disappointing news about Galactic.
Yeah.
Okay, and here's the official statement. Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser is one of our most creative projects ever and has been praised by our guests and recognized as setting a new bar for innovation and immersive entertainment. This premium experience gave us the opportunity to try new things on a smaller scale of 100 rooms, and we will take what we've learned to create future experiences that can reach more of our guests and fans. We will be contacting guests who booked voyages departing on or after September 30th to discuss options and modifying their plans. To prioritize these guests, we are pausing bookings till May 26th, so a couple of days after the show goes live. And we are so proud of all the cast members and the Imagineers who brought Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser to life and look forward to delivering an excellent experience for the guests during the remaining voyages over the coming months. So again, gentle way of saying the Galactic Star Cruiser is going away. Now, let's talk about the timing. This announcement was made on the very same day that Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny is debuting at Cannes. And again, I know we were talking at the top of the show about how, you know, over at Rotten Tomatoes, there's only 26 reviews that have come in, and it's only got a 52% freshness rating. But at the same time, they had already promised that they were at the Cannes, officials at Cannes were going to give Harrison Ford a Lifetime Achievement Award. So Disney knew going into this, no matter how the film is received, we're going to get some positive press out of this day. So a way to deflect and defer the bad news about the Galactic Star Cruiser shutting down, let's do it on the same day that we're over in Cannes. Bob Iger and Kathleen Kennedy are on the other side of the Atlantic, so it's hard to ask them tough questions about this. And if anything, you're 6 hours out of joint from the news cycle. And so only a Bob Iger would think like this. And in fact, also to further throw the Galactic Star Cruiser news into eclipse, the very same day is when the Disney company announces that it's walking away from the Lake Nona development, you know, a $1 billion thing in Florida. And so...
But wasn't that on the horizon already when Iger came in? Didn't he stop WDI from going to Lake Nona?
I worked up a timeline about this just to be sure. Only 200 people had relocated by the time the project got paused and or got canceled. And even then, it was last summer that Disney put out the news that we were originally supposed to get this complex open by 2024. We're now sliding our projected opening date to 2026. And given that, we are pausing our relocation efforts. So, you know, didn't say stop, said pause.
Okay, okay.
And to further muddy the water here, in January of this year, Disney did put out, we are still on target to open in 2006. We are still pausing bringing the bulk of our folks, but they stress, you know, we had people arrive who were going to be on the ground and help to get this 60-acre complex up out of the ground. So Bob Iger knows how to play the game. If you go and read the official statement about how proud Disney was of what they tried to do with Galactic Star Cruiser, it reminds me a lot of how the company reacted the weekend after John Carter opened at the box office in 2012 and underperformed at the box office. And normally in a situation like that, a studio is looking for somebody to throw under the bus. You know, when you lose that much money on a film that was supposed to launch an entire franchise. But Andrew Stanton, the gentleman who directed Finding Nemo for Pixar, was the guy who tried his hand at live action when doing John Carter. And a Bob Iger, who, you know, again, is good at chess. It's like, okay, so we lost $400 million on John Carter of Mars between the, you know, production costs and promotion, and we're never getting that money back. On the other hand, if Andrew Stanton stays, you know, if he doesn't walk away from Disney and Pixar with his tail tucked between his legs, we get the Finding Nemo sequel, Finding Dory, in 4 years. Right. And that will make billions for us. So I'm going to step out as the head of the Walt Disney Company and basically say, look, we took a big swing. And we, as a company, failed. So this isn't any one individual. And so because Iger was smart enough to play it that way, Andrew Stanton stayed. And he did direct Finding Dory, and it did make billions for the company. And what's kind of interesting, if you've been following Andrew, Didn't he? He did a Mandalorian, right?
Yeah, he did one of the. Oh, why can't I remember? It was a good one.
It was
in the first season, and he was also. I think he
Stranger
he helped
Things
write several.
Yeah,
he did Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's all over the place mm-hmm. right now. I think that you're right. Mm-hmm. They usually try to blame somebody, mm-hmm. but a lot of times the blame is too many cooks. Mm-hmm. And I just like what Iger did. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the hotel, though, mm-hmm. was he involved in that, or was that a Chapek thing?
Yes, it was a Bob Chapek who stood on stage at the D23 Expo and proudly walked out the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser concept. If we really start to drill down into what this actually cost the company, building the physical hotel with its 100 rooms and its atrium and its huge video screens on the bridge, you know, that created that seamless lookout into space thing between design and development, research, playtesting, hiring the cast, training the cast, training the support staff, the hotel, $250 million without even breaking a sweat. Disney acquired Lucasfilm October of 2012. This project was in development as early as 2013.
Oh, okay.
Without even breaking a sweat, Brian, this was $1 billion. But Disney was willing to spend $1 billion because Bob Chapek honestly believed this was the next big thing. This sort of immersive, premium immersive experience. Again, remember, people were paying $5,000 and $6,000 to, you know.
And that was the problem. I mean, when you're going to open up a hotel, especially there, people will go to your hotel if you're charging $300, $400, maybe $500 a night. Mm-hmm. People will go there. The Animal Kingdom mm-hmm. is always packed, and you can't get a room there for less than $250, $300. Mm-hmm. That's what they should have done with this. Mm-hmm. I mean, did they really need to try to get the most premium price? I know they went after a certain audience, but when that audience does it one, maybe two times, they're done.
The Venn diagram here was one percenters and right. Star Wars fans with really deep pockets. And the thing is, for the one percenters, the folks who money is no object, they want a sense. I mean, it's literally one of these things where those folks walked into the teeny tiny Star Wars themed rooms, and it's like, well, what's the thread count in here, and why is there a bunk bed? And so those folks did it once and would not come back because it wasn't luxurious. On the other hand, there's this famous saying when it comes to cruise ships that you lay the keel in one economy and then you launch in another. I mean, these things take forever to build. And sadly, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, you know, launches in late winter, early spring of 2022. And we have been in this period of time where the drumbeat, are we in a recession or are we not in a recession? Yeah. You know, because every time we turn around, there's another high-tech company that's laid off 7 to 9% of its staff. So for so many companies, it's like, why are you laying off 7 to 9% of the staff? We're doing well. Or, you know, look at the stock price. And it's like, yeah, but Wall Street told us that they want us to stay, they want to stay confident in a company. We have to, you know, we have to tighten up. We have to make cuts. And so the very folks who Disney built this place for, the young professionals with, you know, without kids who had money, the ones who could, yeah, we'll tack this onto a Disney World vacation, this extra $5,000 to $6,000 thing and see what it's like. Suddenly they're not going to Disney because they're like, geez, I don't know if I'm going to have a job this year. We better save our pennies. And so that had an impact on occupancy rate at this hotel. And only in the past year, 2 years, 3 years, have we seen the prequels get some love. And that's because the folks who grew up watching the prequels,
the generation is growing up.
And they have jobs and they have money.
And they have money, yeah.
All right. So there's the famous story about the early work that was done on Star right. Wars Land for the Disney theme parks, and how initially it was going to be Mos Eisley on Tatooine, and you were going to get to go to the very same cantina that Luke and Obi-Wan went to, and that's where they met, you know, Han Solo and Chewbacca. And it was Kathleen Kennedy herself who convinced Bob Iger. It's like, look, the future of Star Wars is not its past.
But its future.
That's it, exactly. And so they rolled the dice, you know, when it came to Galactic Star Cruiser. It's like, if we're going to do this, we'd already established the world of Batuu, which is set in the world of the new films. They decided to set the planet of Batuu in that timeline. And they then decided, well, the folks are journeying from the ship down to Batuu. This is also the timeline of the ship, which is why you have your epic battle with Rey and Kylo Ren on board the ship, and so on and so forth.
Okay, I've been watching the videos of people who are there and stuff. Mm-hmm. And besides the Ren and the Rey thing, mm-hmm. it doesn't really feel Star Wars. It feels more the Fifth Element than it does Star Wars. Mm. You know, the whole entertainment thing. I mean, that's the diva right out of Fifth Element. Mm. It's not the band out of Mos Eisley or anything like that. It doesn't have a Star Wars feel. The captain, that hat has got to go. It's just cartoony. It's like you're watching, you know, something that it's just animated, and it doesn't have and it's so you go in there and it looks like the prison from Andor.
Wow.
So they didn't make it immersive enough to like, oh, I'm going into Star Wars. No, you're going into space, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But have you seen there's a video out right now about a French hotel mm-hmm. that is a space hotel, and it's funny because the rooms look exactly mm-hmm. like a little bigger, mm-hmm. but almost exactly like the ones on the Halcyon. Mm-hmm. But still, tell me it's not gone completely. Tell me that they just want to retheme it. Tell me that they want to, you know, bring down the price. Because if they do bring down the price, and then maybe you pay a premium for food or stuff like that, I can guarantee that place will be sold out every single week.
The September 28th date for the last voyage is not a coincidence. That's because the new fiscal year for the Walt Disney Company begins on October 1st, 2023. Strictly from a bookkeeping point of view. I mean, and the other thing, remember here, that Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser was a hotel. And the way hotels work is that you, as an owner, understand that you are going to lose, you know, you have your huge startup costs. You are going to lose money for the first 3 and 4 years, but you're eventually going to turn a corner. You learn back everything you spent to get your hotel up out of the ground, and then it's money. It's a solid earner. And the fact that Disney, you know, looking at what the hotel was pulling in and looking what was happening in response of the discount that was offered to Disney Visa holders, the discount that was offered to annual pass holders, and the fact that they did not get the response that they hoped for. And just sort of being cold-blooded, staring down the road, looking at what that meant. And yes, there were discussions about new storylines, different cruise itineraries to get people who previously experienced it back. But again, there was just a whole notion of, are we throwing good money after bad? And already you had the situation where, based on the reaction, suddenly Disneyland Paris is getting cold feet about, you know, I mean, hell, Disneyland Paris was getting cold feet about Batuu, let alone the Star Wars hotel. Though there were never any official public discussions about it, the Oriental Land Company was just sort of like, I know we've talked about this privately. I don't think this is happening. So it was going to be Disney Institute meets Disney right. Quest in Chicago. You know, just sort of, it was one of those things where when it was busy, it was very busy, and people loved it. But, you know, there were just these huge chunks of time then when there weren't enough people in it to support it. By the way, I know what you said about the captain with her giant hat. I had a number of interactions during the cruise that Len and I had with the performer playing the captain. And yes, ridiculous outfit, incredibly sincere, talented performer. In fact, that's a thing. There are so many hugely talented, dedicated cast members working on this project, both on stage, behind the scenes.
Make her Janeway then. Make her make her somebody who, when you see her, you don't think cartoon, Warner Brothers cartoon. When you see her, you see like powerful, a person who's in charge. I'm sorry, the design for her, the blue skin and stuff like that, it just didn't, it doesn't come across when you just see it. But when you like see Janeway or other women who are in charge of the Star Trek universe, someone like that, it made it like it was too much of a High School Musical rather than you're going into. Listen, the line waiting to go see Rise of the Resistance is more themed than some of the rooms in the Star Wars hotel.
Having actually physically been in the space, I think I'm going to bury the needle in the other direction. I mean, think they tried. They maybe bet on the wrong horse by building these things around a Rise of Skywalker and that mythos. But let's remember that the company itself, we just got the announcement of the new Rey film that supposedly will do a trilogy. And also remember, circling back to what Bob Iger did here, this failure was not laid at the feet of Kathleen Kennedy. And that's largely because Kathleen Kennedy has all sorts of hugely successful television projects for Disney Plus, whether it's Mandalorian Season 4, Ahsoka, Andor Season 2, Skeleton Crew, The Acolyte, and not to mention the Young Jedi Adventures, which already is printing money for the company.
Oh my God. Have you seen it?
They're cute.
I went to the dentist the week after, and I got several more cavities because I was watching it. So, no, I like the idea of the Star Wars hotel. Mm-hmm. I think they should stop it. Mm-hmm. It is brilliant. Nobody has ever done anything like this before. It's something that I really want to go to, and I think more people will want to go to. But, like you say, most Star Wars people are not in the 1%. Mm-hmm. But I can guarantee you most Star Wars people want to go and be immersed in this Star Wars universe.
There were discussions months ago with the scenario of if the hotel fails, what do we do? And it's like one of the things that was discussed was the very same system, the shuttle, it's back in in the back of the box truck that takes people back and forth from the Halcyon to the Black Spire Outpost, that this could be an upcharge, you know, to the effect of, oh, you'd like to go up to the Halcyon for a 3 or 4 hour-long experience. Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, and then you could have a dinner in the Carillion dining room, and you could go visit the bridge and hang out in the bar or do a little shopping. I mean, it's like any sort of add-on to an actual cruise. With the way this went down, with the last cruise happening, at the last possible moment before the fiscal year for 2022-2023 ends, and the way theme parks actually operate with the notion of, you know, years and years of depreciation, I'm wondering how long this stays shuttered before.
Oh, I don't think long.
I don't know about that.
Because they like I said, they built this thing for $1 billion.
They did. They did.
It's there, and they probably did a lot of research, and people really want to do this thing. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, do you think that if it was like half the price, you know, if it was $2,500 instead of $5,000, do you think that would have been better, or even like $2,000? I mean,
I do not know what to tell you here. And what's fascinating with talking with friends who work in themed entertainment, they will point to the effect of, well, look, Meow Wolf does amazing business at its, you know, almost $100 price point. Likewise, things like Sleep No More. These are premium interactive experiences that continue to do well. So the worry is that this will have a chilling effect on these sort of super ambitious projects. But on the other hand, does this mean that Comcast doesn't go forward with the Halloween Horror Night standalone that was going to be built in Vegas, I would say no. I would say that that's going to go forward. Though, worth noting, and you were just talking about Star Trek, remember in Vegas at the Hilton.
That was a great one.
I never got to it.
Oh, it was so, I was blown away that somebody did something Disney-like, which was not Disney.
Yep.
I mean, the way they got you from the museum to the
by the way, not to give away the effect here, but exact same thing in Poseidon's Fury in Florida.
Right.
That very same technology. So, you know, just in one case, giant room goes away.
Didn't that come from Landmark? Didn't Landmark do those things?
I want to say, Gary? Yes. I know Landmark was very much involved in the Star Trek thing. But again, even the Star Trek thing in Vegas shut down because, again, there was a finite audience. So, again, I have heard that all of that stuff from Star Trek The Experience was hauled away to some warehouse, and the notion was we will find another hotel in the Vegas area and we will bring this back. And I can't help but believe, given what's going on with Trek these days, I mean, just the way people just walked away from season 3 of Picard singing its praises, it's like, why isn't anybody digging the experience out of storage and setting it up someplace, you know?
Remember when the Great America in San Jose was actually owned by Paramount?
Oh, interesting.
And they had the Top Gun roller coaster. Mm-hmm. They had Star Trek stuff. That's money ready to be printed right there.
To sort of bring this to a close, folks, again, it is sad what happened with Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser. It was ambitious. They had a very talented group of people, both on stage and behind the scenes. And as the company put it, they took a big swing and, you know, it didn't work.
What was the percentage of occupancy? Well, at the beginning, it was sold out, right?
Yeah.
When you were there, what was the occupancy rate, do you know?
You know, I can only tell you anecdotally. I mean, you know, for example, when we were down in the dining room, it was a two-level space, and everybody at my seating for dinner was on the floor. The elevated booths that circled the room, virtually every single one of them was empty. So it was, you know, it was one of these things where it's like, that tells me the ship is half empty, but nobody ever shared that number with me. I mean, that's my own personal observation. So
the numbers aren't out there then?
No, the numbers
aren't out there.
And like I said, this is Disney. Disney is going to put this in the rearview mirror very quickly.
But isn't this supposed to be in the yearly report? Isn't something like that, like how well the hotels do, or it's an attraction more than a hotel, right?
If we are talking about the annual reports at the Walt Disney Company printed back in the 1970s, yes, you got occupancy rate. If we are talking about, first of all, Disney stopped actually printing annual reports 10 years or so ago. They now became digital, and we choose not to share that info.
Well, were any parts of the area when you were doing the interactions, was it crowded? Were you like vying for position to see what was going on? Because the first stuff, everybody, there was like when they did something in the foyer, it was packed.
Len did share with me that when he went on the very first cruise, so it was more crowded. But again, there can only be one first cruise, and you know.
Didn't he do just one day though, or was it 2 days?
No, that's Drew who did the 1 day press visit. Len did the full 2 day long experience. So,
well, I think it should be longer too. I think 3 days and you'll be happy.
They couldn't sell out the 2 day experience. Why would
But that's the price point, though.
But again, for a three-day experience, you would have to write a script for a three-day experience. You would have to cast it for a three-day experience. I mean, again, there was a business plan here, and sadly, the business plan did not pan out. But anyway, folks, as we learn more about what's going on and when the Galactic Star Cruiser becomes available for booking trips on May 26th, our understanding is all of the previously announced discounts go away because now, of course, there'll be huge demand to get on it before in Main Street electrical play street parlance, it glows away forever. But anyway, as we hear more, we will share here. And both on this podcast as well as various social media channels. And toward that end, Brian, can you tell the nice folks where they can find you on social media?
Yes, I'm on Twitter. It's Geek with Children, and children is spelled C-H-I-L-D-R-N. Mm. And I'm there every once in a while just talking about what's going on. And where are you?
I am still on the Twitters, likewise over at Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. Beyond that, I want to remind you, we have a couple other podcasts here you might want to check out. And in fact, again, just to remind you, head over to the Disney Dish. This week, we have the story of Indiana Jones and the Summer of Hidden Mysteries. And later this afternoon, Drew Taylor and I will be recording a brand new fine-tuning, and I'm hoping that Mr. Taylor gets to share, because supposedly he got to see Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse at one point this week.
Wow.
So yes, I'm hoping that he's not barred by an embargo.
With that, if anybody out there gets their cell phone from T-Mobile, next week you will be able, or the week that Spider-Man comes out, you will be able to get a $5 ticket to any theater that you want to see it at. Like if you want to see it in the Dolby Theater, if you want to see it in the 3D theater, $5. So if you have T-Mobile, I'm not doing an ad here, but I just want more people to know what they can get on T-Mobile Tuesdays.
Clever. Okay. Let's see what else. And of course, Aaron Adams, the very talented gentleman who handles the editing here. He and I do the Marvelous Disney podcast. And, you know, there was also some news that came out of the upfronts there that we'll be touching on. But, okay, I think that's going to do it for this week. So, folks, if you could do Brian and I have a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend looking at the Lucasfilm, that would be very helpful. Likewise, if you go over to Bandcamp and subscribe, well, I could now afford a ticket to, you know, Spider-Man, you know, Across the Spider-Verse, which, again, very much looking forward to. But anyway, that's going to do it for this week's show. So thank you so much for listening, and Brian and I will be back soon.